Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome. Look at that. That's a first, a cattail before we even get going. We are a pet-friendly show. So, Chewy, where are you, man? You should be sponsoring us, but the cat just took over before I could even get going. It's going to be a weird Thursday night, I can tell. But welcome to Surviving the Survivor, the podcast that promises to bring you the very best guests in all of true crime. And I hate to say it, but this is another amazing panel, one after the other. If you can find better panels anywhere else, you name it, I will give you your money back because it ain't going to happen. But there is a lot of Luigi Mangione news. By the way, before we get cracking with that, pun intended, you look behind Tim Jansen, those are nutcrackers. And Tim's annual 26th year of his Christmas party this Monday night. I'm honored to say I have an invite, but I don't think I can make it because different circumstances, and Tim's 8 hours away, and it's freezing where he is right now up in Tallahassee, unlike Miami. However, it is the hottest ticket in town. 300 plus people. Tim, how long do you guys prepare for this party before we get into Luigi?
Maybe 9 weeks.
Wow.
Seven days a week.
And you've got your wife's got boxes of decorations from year to year.
Tractor, trailer full of equipment. I should one day I'm gonna send you a video of the highlight of it so you can see. This is full production. And we were honored when the White House copied our theme this year of Christmas Carousel.
There you go. There's a theme every year. Tim's wife, Steph, is amazing. His daughters are amazing. And it is the hottest ticket in town. Who knows? If the COE gives me a permission slip, maybe Meve and I hop on a flight up to Tally. I think the flight's still running, Tim. I know you had a problem. They are. Yeah. Okay.
COE can come.
Yeah, COE says she's going to text you. She wants to do a holiday tour. We'll put that on Patreon for everyone to see. But big news today. It was a very, very busy day with Luigi Mangione. Of course, he is the man accused of killing Brian Thompson. And I say this every show. We're always talking about Luigi, but this is a guy whose two sons are, absolutely besides themselves. They don't understand why their father's not here. The wife, who was estranged from him, I'm sure is devastated as well. This is a guy who came from, ironically, a blue collar family and worked his way up, to the upper echelons of the, healthcare business, was worth a lot of money and then gunned down, December 4th in cold blood. And we're going to get into, why that happened. But first, quick update on the news here. Federal charges. He's now slapped with new federal charges. That, of course, opens the door to the death penalty. NYPD investigators, detectives, they are saying that this has been in the planning since at least August. That's according to a notebook that they have with his writings in it. In that notebook, and we'll get more into this as well, he said that the target, I quote here, target is insurance. And as for why United Healthcare and Brian Thompson, quote unquote, it checks all the boxes. So we'll discuss all this. Best guests. We've got famed criminal defense attorney R, the letter R and O-U-R, Timothy Jansen. Everyone on the show knows him. He is the famed Tallahassee criminal defense attorney. Also, his firm voted best firm in Tallahassee. And he was a federal prosecutor for 5 years. So Tim can fill us in on the whole federal angle now of this case with these new federal charges coming in. Next up, David Sarney, a retired NYPD detective. He worked within several positions during his 27-year tenure. And toward the end, he was involved in the training of new and currently assigned investigators in the Detective Bureau. And he also teaches at John Jay, the School of Criminal Justice, which is among, if not the finest in the country. Last, certainly not least, and it's been a while, Dr. Ildiko Taburi, one of the coolest names. She's been featured in different documentaries, but we got to know her because she was featured in the A&E documentary about the Menendez brothers, a whole other story. She received her PhD in clinical psychology from the California School of Professional Psychology in Los Angeles. And three. So let's just jump right into it. Tim Jansen, let me start with you. How does the dynamic change now that he is slapped with these new federal charges? And they include murder through the use of a firearm, two counts of stalking, and one count of possession of a firearm.
Well, you know, a lot of the times these people commit murders like this knowing, depending on the state, if they have the death penalty. The federal government always has had the death penalty. Very limited use, not a lot of use to it. You probably got 16 inmates right now on death row in the federal system. There was a time when it was a little like 79 total. I think the last one was in 2021 was the last one that was executed. If he gets the death penalty, he would go to the federal prison in Terre Haute, Indiana, is where they do hold all death inmates. And his death would be by lethal injection.
And do you think it's, do you think that's really in the cards? Are they going to really put to death a 26-year-old who we don't know his mental state yet? But do you think the feds are going to, they kind of explicitly said today that they wanted to have that option. But are they going to use it?
Well, they go to the grand jury, and you know, the grand jury will indict. They can indict anybody, mostly. But just because the feds have this doesn't mean they're going to get a different jury, right? You're going to have the same jury pool of New York City residents in the boroughs up there. So you might get some that might not believe in the death penalty. I mean, for instance, you got people trying to claim this guy's a hero for coldly premeditated planning and executing someone in daylight. And so I'm not sure he'll get the death penalty. It's not easy to get the death penalty. You have to have factors. It's got to be so egregious. It's certainly immoral, but I'm not sure it's going to rise to the level of egregious. But, you know, sometimes they negotiate. The Unabomber didn't get death penalty. So you have it. It'll depend on – he's got really good lawyers, and they'll probably negotiate something.
I'm going to come back to you to ask you about like where he may spend his time in a state or federal prison. But let me go to David Sarney next. Brooklyn born and bred. So, David, this is an interesting question just right out of the gates. In STS Nation, it's a Thursday night. We're getting close to the holidays. It's a horrible subject, but let's at least, you know, have fun amongst ourselves here. Genzo 33, parasites, of course, that's the word he used in his quote-unquote manifesto. Do we know the destination of Luigi's bus ticket? Was McDonald's just a rest stop? Could he have kept the gun to use it as quote-unquote final destination? The bigger question here, David, they've got this guy. They say he is the guy. But in terms of the investigation, we're really just getting going. Are your former colleagues at the NYPD going to get answers to these questions eventually? Where was he headed? Was he going to strike? Why was he in San Francisco? How did he get to Pittsburgh? Do they have to answer all of these questions ahead of them?
Well, I'll say this. It's going to take some time. Most of the things, and reality is the media is not going to get everything, and they shouldn't. So when this, as they're doing this investigation, you'll get drips and drabs of things that they want to release. And it's probably best not to tell anybody everything because you've given it. I think it's been very transparent, sometimes overtly transparent in what they're doing on this case. So with their what they're doing now with this investigation is you've got the body. It's called the marshal of evidence. You're getting all the evidence together. But within the framework of the work that he's written, the writings that he has, the social media imprint that he's had, they're working on that still. Because you still have to connect the dots. And I will tell you that the defense attorney on this case, Agnifilo, has been around a while. She's no stranger to New York County DA's office. She's no stranger to the courtroom. She's going to be looking for things that the detectives make mistakes on. And that's why we exploit mistakes. And defense attorneys, as I would say, you exploit the mistakes. And there'll be documentation, chain of custody, anything along those lines, whatever was said at the grand jury, obviously will be, come out later on at the hearings. So it's not over. The good thing is you have somebody off the street. Whether or not the feds will deal with this, and I'm very surprised the feds jumped on it anyway. You know, we've had an assassination of two cops, Lamorne and Andrews, years ago in the NYPD, and we didn't have, they didn't seem to push the death penalty there. I think what they're doing, and I think it's a little bit against Manhattan DA's office, given the fact of the Daniel Penny trial and the rush to prosecute that trial. And I don't know if the feds actually trust Manhattan DA's office to get a thorough prosecution and get the results they want.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think that would. Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, and we're getting to the doctor in a minute, but the Daniel Penny case, for those who do not know, he was just acquitted. He's the guy who put a chokehold on a other person in the subway, and that person ultimately died. That, I don't think that case would have been prosecuted in Florida, Tim. What do you think?
No, it would not have been prosecuted. He would have never been charged. I will say this. The prosecution is really smart. They'll put somebody in the grand jury they don't call as a witness. That grand jury would never be turned over to the defense. Only if they call that person as a witness do they have to turn over that grand jury. So what you see a lot of times, they'll put somebody in that just summarizes the evidence, never call them as a witness, and you're not entitled to it.
Hmm. So Dr. Tabori, by the way, does New York have the death penalty? The answer is no. They abolished it back in 2004, and that is precisely why many think we're seeing these federal charges, because that's how you can rope in the death penalty. Thank you so much for the super sticker here from Mary Kolovich. I appreciate it. But Dr. Ildiko, I've just got to ask you, you know, when you heard this story, you're on the other coast, but obviously huge news, and you're a psychologist. What was your initial thought about someone taking out a healthcare executive? What was running through your mind at first blush?
Well, you know, there was that data breach that occurred earlier this year, and I, as a provider who takes insurance, was affected by that. So my initial gut reaction was maybe it was some medical worker who was pissed off that they didn't get paid for 2 months, like I didn't get paid for 2 months. But then as pictures were coming out, I was looking at this, and I was guesstimating the age of him. And all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? This guy's mentally ill. He has mental health issues, and I will bet anything on it. I don't know if that's going to be the defense, but there's something going on. He's 26 years old. Chronic mental health conditions come out in the late teens, early to mid 20s, and that's exactly what we're looking at. You know, he lost contact with his family 6 months ago, and that paranoia was coming up. I have his manifesto right here in front of me, and I was just reviewing it. And, you know, I mean, he's a smart guy, but remember, mental illness has nothing to do with your intelligence. And he fits that profile.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying, you know, did he have like a schizophrenic break? That's something that you do see in mid-20-year-olds, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He either has some sort of psychotic disorder like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. I haven't seen the manic stuff yet, except for that one episode where, you know, he's being taken in after he was first arrested. But, you know, that agitation, but... You know, I'm not there.
Yeah. Tim Jansen, I got a ton of questions for everybody tonight. This has come up already twice. So from Melissa, would it be possible for the judge to require a bench trial? Tim shaking his head no, because of possible jury nullification, because the high profile nature of this. Why are you so sure that is a no, Tim
Jansen? It's not the judge's decision. Every American has entitled to a trial by jury. If the defense wants to agree to a judge trial, and if the prosecution agrees, then you can do it. It's not the judge's decision. I find it's going to be really difficult for him to get an insanity defense because of the planning, the cover-up, the leaving, and getting away without his exposure, taking effect to avoid prosecution, avoid. Those clearly show reasons, a reasonable person committing a crime, trying to be undetected, and getting away. So he might, but I don't think it'll reach that degree for a defense of mental insanity. That's really hard in federal court. It's hard in state court.
Tim, also, so now you've got federal charges in New York State, but you've got state charges, and they, you know, they talked about Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, talked about it today about how they run parallel. But what takes precedence here?
The Fed case will go faster. The Fed case trial will be set in like 60 days. There is no discovery in federal cases, so you don't have many delays. I think they just have to turn over the evidence. There might be experts they're going to want to call, but it's going to be a lot quicker than they know in New York. I think that trial would take about a year and a half, two, to go to trial. This trial will be going to trial by June at the latest in federal.
Really? Wow. And now, if he's ultimately convicted in both a federal and then a state court, does he spend his time in a federal prison?
He'd rather spend it in a federal than a state prison. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, it's
better. Federal prison's much better. Better resources, better accommodations. But he'll be put in the highest level. So I don't know if he'll go to Colorado, but he might be going to Terre Haute, Indiana. But I just don't see him getting a death penalty. I just don't see it as egregious as his crime was.
Yeah. Here comes the NYPD question, and then I got some for David. But if the ballistics don't match, can they still prove without reasonable doubt? What if he printed more than one gun? That's a different gun. From what I understand, some of the markings already do match. But what about this, David?
Well, the ballistics came back, and that was the benefit of him keeping the gun. Is now you have a guy who's in Altoona, Pennsylvania, 6 days after a shooting, with a gun matching the ballistics of an incident that took place in Manhattan. So there's your connection, which is great. That's one aspect that's really good about it. So the ballistics are already there. They've got that. They have other forensic evidence identifying or matching him to the scene, to at least around the scene of the scene of the shooting. So that's beneficial also. They still have, again, it's an extremely circumstantial, but damning circumstantial evidence. I mean, that's the one thing you could look at. And as far as the detective's concerned, I tell my students all the time, this is a squishy case, because all it takes is one person to just not believe the evidence, to not, you know, believe beyond a reasonable doubt that the person did that. And it's up to the responsibility of the detectives to make sure that case is so solid that when they prosecute this case, the jury will believe beyond a reasonable doubt that the person who is on trial did it. And that's why it's a continuing investigation. We have a lot of things, but you just can't depend on it. Because I've seen, and I would say it's been certain, we had a case where DNA is on scene of the perpetrator and still not a conviction. We've seen that before. It's New York County, it's Manhattan. And I think really is the issue is that this federal court will, and again, the federal system so much faster. In New York, the myriad of discovery's got to take place, along with every other bit of evidence. It would take much longer. And I think it's beneficial. And we've seen it with a lot of police department cases. If we can go federal, we'll go federal, because it's a better system in a sense than the state. So I'm not concerned about them taking the case. I think it's best. But since Alvin Bragg in New York County already had a big high profile case go south, they're not going to let this happen again. So they're going to do everything they can. But I'll take, you know, I would love to go any case that I would tell people, if you can take it federal, take it federal, because you don't have the same impetuses that you have in state court, especially in New York County. Oh, there are differences the way things are done in New York.
So let's watch this. This is, you know, Luigi Mangione had a very long Thursday today. He was in court at 8:30 in the morning in Pennsylvania, about 4.5 hours away. He had a preliminary hearing. He still has state charges that he has to answer to in Pennsylvania. Then he waived extradition. There was supposed to be an extradition hearing. NYPD was there in full force. They had him shackled, put into the back of a Suburban, and then flew him back here and then got him by chopper to Manhattan. And this is him arriving here. And you'll notice there's quite a few people with him here. It's him coming off the chopper. I'm going to keep the sound up. You know, he looks fine. He's got a little bit of a haircut. He's shaved. David, what's going on here? This is a tremendous show of force here. And there obviously are fans of his, quote unquote fans. And is the security more for the NYPD or more for him? Because, and there you see Mayor Adams to his right on the left side of the screen there. But Is this protection for everybody, more so for police, more so for Luigi? What's happening?
It is a massive showing of a park walk that we haven't. I mean, you don't usually get this type of notoriety. But the reason why is with all the provocations of people who are thinking he's a hero on social media. You can see how you know, probably wearing he's all geared up. They have Midtown North detectives there. They're taking him in. This is a massive show of people that you don't see, but it's also an open area. This heliport is open and accessible by windows. I've been to that heliport. So you want to make sure that, you know, you show that force. The reality is it comes down to the fact that if you show this, you're showing what he did or what he's accused of will not be tolerated. And that the government will protect the innocent, the victims of these cases, protect the innocents, and serve the right, do the right thing for the people who do not do crimes like this. And again, he's accused of this, and a lot of damning evidence of that, but this is a massive showing. You've got the FBI, you have Task Force Day, you're going to have the Marshal Service Day, you've got feds there.
Who are the guys with the helmets? Is that New York City?
That's emergency services. They'll have them. They're also there. Like they'll be out there in full gear. So you're seeing a massive showing. The mayor is there. You know, reality, this is a murder investigation. This is a murder case. But because of the notoriety, the high profile aspect to it, you're going to see the massive showing you have, much like the massive showing you had on the investigation. It is pretty big.
Yeah, by the way, the best part about New York City, I heard someone scream out, "Why'd you do it?" I bet you it's not even a reporter.
Why'd you do it?
Right there. I bet you that's just like a person who's like swinging by a New Yorker. Dr. Tabori, I got to ask you. I know you're not a body language expert. This is him coming off the plane. hang on a sec. I just want to get this message out of the way. I mean, this is kind of nuts. Obviously getting special treatment, and I'll take it back here. This is obviously a different angle, but when we look at this part of it, COE, did you bring up, you brought up a different video. Okay. So when you're looking at the other video, COE, can you bring the other one up? What are you seeing in him, if anything? You know, the first time we saw him publicly, he had this like kind of screaming episode where the police pushed him up against a wall. He looks a little defiant. He looks calm. He looks like he's in a little bit of shock, like as to how many people are there and looking at him. But what do you notice?
What I see is somebody who's very nervous, but has also been instructed by his attorney not to respond to anybody, not to react, not to say anything. Be calm, be polite, be respectful, just walk. I think he was warned. I think he was prepped for this. But he does look nervous. Look, if you know, you see his hand, he's kind of clutching it with his other hand. You know, he's tense. Now, granted, he's shackled. I understand that, but he's tense.
Do you think he's medicated? A lot of people are asking.
You know, I was thinking that myself. I don't, who knows? You know, even if he's given something for anxiety, that might calm him down a little bit, but this is a big deal. So, I mean, he's still going to feel something in there.
Yeah. Man, I just feel so badly for Brian Thompson's family, these guys. And also, I got to say, I feel sorry for Luigi Mangione's parents and sisters that they got, you know, just, all these lives are ruined in a literal instant over, I don't know, maybe a mentally ill person or someone who went about his thinking process all the wrong way. Tim Jansen, there you see Luigi Better Days with his mom and dad on the left. Interesting stuff with the mom that I'm going to ask the doctor about in a minute. But Tim Jansen over here, this is him in federal court. So he literally was in court, state court in Pennsylvania, gets back here, and now he's in federal court. It was a fairly short hearing. What happens at a hearing like this? He's obviously looking at notes there, but just walk us through the process since there are no cameras.
So what he probably had was his arraignment. They read the charges, the indictment. They can formally read the entire indictment. They can waive it. They have him in the district, and he can see if he has a lawyer appointed to him. He can get one appointed to him, or he can hire one, and they'll enter a notice of appearance. Now, they might have just done first appearance and not the arraignment. We normally do them at the same time. So, and that same time is when they usually give a trial date, a tentative trial date. I haven't heard anybody say that yet. So we'd be curious to see if they have another arraignment. Maybe his lawyers wasn't available. But when he comes into the district, he has the right to go before the judge immediately and learn of the charges.
Yeah. What a crazy day for him. And the charges are going to run parallel.
The elements of the offenses would be a little different. Some require you got to have interstate jurisdiction nexus for the federal charges.
Yeah. So David, back to you. The state charges, in addition to first degree murder, which is very rare in New York City, two counts of second degree murder. There's terrorism stuff in there. There's second degree forgery, weapon possession. Second degree, it's a 25 to life sentencing. But just talk to us again, and I think I've asked you this before. First degree is very rare in New York City. So why here? Why now?
I think this is where Manhattan DA's office is trying to get, you know, the best bang for their buck. With the evidence they have available, they're going to look to do the murder one because as part of the terrorism charge. You don't see that charge unless it deals with law enforcement. So this is something that's kind of unusual. But we've seen in a lot of times, in, you know, as detectives, and we do a case, we always want to ask the prosecutors, can we charge a higher charge? And if we have to lower it later on, we would do that. Apparently, they feel very comfortable with charging the first-degree murder charge. And again, this is New York County. And this is, you know, you're dealing with some people who are maybe a little sympathetic. And during that voir dire, during the jury selection, you know, we're hoping that people will take all of their look at the facts of the case, then all of the hysteria around it, either pro him or anti healthcare. That's not important. What's important is the act that was taking place. It's a crime. What he's accused of is murdering a person in cold blood on a Wednesday morning and planning it meticulously, leaving the scene, not just leaving the scene, leaving the state. So this is where the feds get involved. And I say this because I think he was very smart for the federal court, you know, for district court, for, you know, Eastern District, I think Southern District, to actually do this because it's important. Because they don't feel confident in Manhattan, New York County, the DA's office, prosecuting this case to the fullest extent. And we've seen that before, unfortunately, with the DA's office here. You know, the detectives will do their work. And a lot of times, unfortunately, especially with New York County, we've seen a very adversarial aspect when it comes to working with detectives and investigators. I saw it near the end of my enforcement career, where it was no longer a camaraderie. We were working together for the common cause, which is doing the right thing. They became impetuses. And with unfortunately, the way Manhattan DA's office has been, it's been very negative toward law enforcement and its partners, the police.
Yeah. Thank you to Graciela Gracie, I think in Australia. In my opinion, chronic pain is so debilitating that mixed with youth and wealth, unable to find relief and seeing your life ruined can definitely change someone. Violence is never the answer. Certain people take matters in their own hands. Again, Aldico, you're thinking, you know, maybe there's some sort of break here, a mental break. But, you know, he's pretty clear that he's upset. Sources within the NYPD are kind of leaking some stuff out, and they're saying that he harbored a deep grudge against the entire medical community for how it treated one of his sick relatives. And they believe that eventually boiled over. So I guess what is the underlying factor? Did he latch onto this because this was a cause for him? Does he really care about this family member, or did he just want to, you know, have some sort of, fight, some sort of cause to go with?
Well, you know, I'd be interested in seeing how that plays out. But, you know, when somebody is experiences a psychotic break or a psychotic episode, they are truly focused on something, whether it's rational or not rational, you know. And if you look at this, if you read this paragraph long manifesto, it's not that rational. I mean, it is and it's not. I mean, you can kind of read between the lines and get what he's saying, but there was something there. You know, had he been in his right mind, he would have done what, you know, other people of his generation are doing, get on TikTok and, you know, spew your venom that way. It takes, you know, this isn't just somebody who's mad at an insurance company. We're all mad at insurance companies. You know, it's right. I mean, I see it on both ends as a provider and a consumer. It's a pain in the ass to deal with, but we're not going to go out and shoot the CEO of one of these insurance companies. And had he been in his rational mind, he wouldn't have. He would have been on TikTok.
Joel, we can't hear you, Joel.
Yeah.
Oh. Sometimes I mute myself so I can crack open a Coke, and then I forget to unmute, which has happened. I just realized I haven't eaten today, so I'm trying to apply myself with sugar right now so I don't keel over. Look at this. Joel, no soda. Who's making that rule? I'm trying to survive.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to hit up my insurance company in a few. But, David, what I was going to ask you is, and I asked this question last night, we had two former Rikers inmates, and that's, by the way, where he is headed, and it is a nasty place. Why, in this case, he did. You know, he apparently thought it through, you know, because he had this manifesto. But he didn't really think it through. You know, I think he thought it through to the point of taking this guy out and making a name for himself, et cetera, et cetera. Why is it that criminals in general, people who, quote unquote, break bad, why are they not thinking? I mean, there's crimes of passion, but why are they not thinking, even in a crime of passion, hey, you know, I murder my lover, I'm going to ruin my own life. I'm going to prison. Why is that not a part of human nature? Why is it the other way?
That's a good question. And we look at it this way. For the people I've dealt with, I've dealt with hundreds of people I've locked up, and drug dealers and, you know, shooters and all this. And you always ask the why. And sometimes you get the answers, sometimes you don't. Some people are just who they are. It's just, you know, I've dealt with guys who are, you know, burglars, and I deal with burglars a lot. And burglars do what they do because they're used to it. That's their life. Some people think it's their lifestyle. This is a person who had never been involved in anything like this, who then decided, without anger or not, and again, insanity, you're not going to prove that in New York County, I'll tell you that, because he knew right from wrong, because he's writing it all down. He's doing what he did. He left the scene. This isn't the extreme mental anguish or anything like that. This is a plotted, planned maneuver. But why, you know, people just think they could do it and they'll get away with it. There was a movie called L.A. Confidential. And they were asking, there was Guy Pearce was asked the question, you know, it was him and Kevin Spacey talking, and he was like, why did you become a cop? And Guy Pearce's character said, Rollo Tomasi. I'm there to make sure the guy doesn't get away with it. And that's how it is. I don't know why he thought he could get away with this. I mean, talk about someone who planned this. Monopoly money's found in his bag, which probably, I think was going to probably be a prop he would have used to throw on the body. That might have just change his mind after the real shoot took place. He's never shot anybody before. Now you're in it. Now you got to do what you got to do. You got to get the hell out of there. And that's what he does. So, but this is a person that, you know, for criminals to do what they do, some of them because they're used to it, some of them because they think they can get away with it, and others just do it out of a mistake. And this is not a mistake. This is a guy who thought he can get away with it in a sense. Because you escape, you leave, you match yourself up the whole time. You do what you have a plot, you have a plan to leave the scene, takes the bike, gets in a cab, goes up to the G-dubs, the bus station, gets on a bus, then he gets on a train to get him over to Pennsylvania. So he's thinking he can get away with this. Yeah. But unfortunately, the plan he had of the shoot was there. The plan after 2, 3 days, 4 days down the road failed him. And that's good for us.
David, by the way, do you know if a lot of people are asking, it's a good question, if they're federal charges Rikers is basically a city-state jail. Is he headed to Rikers, or are they going to put him in an MDC like where Diddy is?
Well, either one isn't really good.
No.
If he's going to be held in Rikers, and Rikers, he'll probably be held in the medical area because Harvey Weinstein's there. I learned that from other people. He's not going to be in general population in the blocks down in Rikers. He's going to be held in the medical area, which is almost borderline. It's borderline solitary in a sense, where he's out of the mix of the regular population pending his trial. Now, if he goes to MDC, MDC is not much better either. So it's like, you know, you're not real much of a choice. You either you're taking a bus over to Rikers, or you're going to walk across the street to Pearl Street to MDC.
Yeah. Have you been inside of Rikers, David?
Yeah, it's not good. It's not. I've been upstate prison. They're not good, and there's a reason why they're not good. And I had a whole half a semester on talking about Rikers Island. People I work with have worked there. One person I know, you know, it's been a facility. It's been problems for decades. Everyone knows it is. Nobody fixes it. And when they fix it, they just, you know, they're looking to close it and create these community jails. That's another story into itself. But Rikers is not for the weak-hearted. It is not a place that you want to be spending a couple of weeks, couple of months waiting for your next court appearance.
Yeah. By the way, if you like the show, please hit the like button, subscribe. We've got a Patreon page where the COE puts a lot of court documents, things of that nature, behind the scenes stuff. Look at this. There's a rule. I'm not allowed to bring it up, but my beloved mother, who's over my right ear here, I wrote a book about her. She's a Holocaust survivor. She's a badass. She yells at me constantly, screaming at me today and yesterday, constantly telling me how to be better. And she's a role model. She's been to hell and back, as I said. And right now, for $1.99, you can get it on Kindle for 3 weeks. For 3 weeks. Only 3 weeks. And then it's going back to the regular price.
Love it.
But there you go. It will change the way you look at life. And Dr. Tabori, I want you to read it because I'll send you a copy because I want you.
Oh, I'd love to read it.
Yeah, I would like to get your take on how dysfunctional I really am. But question to you, Dr. Tabori. Someone just said, well, he's never dealt with consequences. Similar question that I just asked David, which is, why do people kill? Why do they rob banks? Why do they do all these things? Knowing they're going to be behind bars, they're going to get caught 9.5 times out of 10. Why commit these crimes? I guess specifically Luigi in this case.
All right. Well, look, you're asking this question from your rational brain, and we're dealing with somebody who doesn't have a rational brain. And again,
it's not that rational. If you read the book,
not your personal rational brain. But, you know, we have to differentiate between intelligence and a mental illness, right? He's very intelligent. His executive functioning, which is the higher level cognitive functionings that are right here in your brain, are still intact. You know, nothing has happened. He's at this prime cognitive capacity. He can plan something, but the mental illness takes over and that paranoia kicks in. That grandiosity can be kicking in if he has bipolar disorder, and the consequences make no difference. He's not understanding that there is consequence because that part of his brain has been taken over by, you know, the dopamine that is affecting the psychotic processes. He can plan. He doesn't necessarily mean that he is rational. You know, if we look at it, and look, I started my career in the LA County Jail here. And, you know, we look at people who are competent versus incompetent to stand trial. The threshold for competency is very low. Do you know who your attorney is? Do you know what the judge does, what a jury does, what the other side does, the prosecuting attorney? You can be completely in a psychotic episode and still be competent to stand trial. I just did an evaluation like that last week. You know, We're coupling two things together, and we need to pull those things apart.
Well said there. Interesting question, Tim. I promise I'll come back to you. But the Tombs is kind of an infamous place in the city, below Central Booking, I believe. David, first of all, just tell us, you know, he did, I'm sure he had to go to central booking. Did he have mugshots taken there? When are we going to see him? I don't think we've seen him yet. But there's also a holding cell down there. Is it possible he's down there right now? Is it still open?
I'll say this. I've seen other high-profile people down in the tombs. There's a separate area they'll put them in. What happened is they could have processed him at Midtown North, which probably was the smartest idea. They did it downtown Manhattan. They probably did it in the Manhattan DA's office. Because the DA squad, you can do it there. And they probably kept them in the holding cells up in the Manhattan DA's office or in the DA squad and just took him down to arraignments. He probably didn't go down to the tombs at all. You don't really have to. And the process is probably quickened for the fact that once they get the arrest number, they're going to send him right over to arraignments. Because I've seen that with high-profile cases in the past. We really kind of surpass waiting downstairs to wait for to go to arraignments. He probably went to one of to AR1 or AR2 as soon as he got processed, printed, and everything got cleared through. He went straight downstairs to arraignments.
Is it true that tombs are 200 years? Tell me a little bit about the tombs. That sounds scary as hell, man. That sounds worse than Rikers.
Well, the tombs are. We've been down there a lot. It's another. It's a better wing of what Rikers would be or could be. It's just a holding area for arraignments, primarily if anyone gets arrested or for detention to be transported to another area, another city. They'll be downstairs. It's really all it is open cell area. The corrections officers are right available. All the cells are visible to everybody. They're always checked. They're always surveyed. There's no one ever really left alone. We have members of the Criminal Justice Bureau down there who are talking, who are trying to, they talk to each person to decide or see if those people are bail eligible, if they have residences or anything like that. So then they bring that upstairs to the DA's office at least up to arraignments when necessary. But if he was down there, it's just a regular holding area.
By the way, Brooklyn Pasola, one of the best names. She's always in here. I wonder if Brooklyn has the same Brooklyn accent as David Sarney. I would say yes. You guys never been to Brooklyn or into this part of the city? I mean, it is salt of the earth. David is born and raised there. You don't find better people. And by the way, last night, not to segue to this, but we had a guy from Brooklyn who spent 20 years, a lot of it in Rikers Island. He was on yesterday. If you want to get an idea of what it's going to be like for Luigi in Rikers, we had two former inmates and a whistleblower last night. Thought it was a really interesting show, but Rikers is not a place for the faint-hearted. Let's put it that way. It is a scary place. Tim Jansen, in your best criminal defense voice, I mean, they've got a really competent defense team already working this case. Going to cost them a lot of money. Luckily, this guy comes from a ton of money. Is this a case, number one, that you'd want to jump on? And what are you doing? What are you doing right away? If you pick this case up, Tim, what are the first things? Are they just going to say this guy was crazy? You got to have empathy, compassion. He's 26 years old. He had a psychotic break, whatever it is. You're going to get your experts to basically say he's crazy.
Well, no, they're not going to claim insanity first. A good lawyer is going to wait and see what all the evidence is first. You're going to look at the reports, chain of custody, where it was collected. Is there any theory that will fit all the evidence, right? And then if that doesn't work, then you're going to, okay, we're going to impeach the testimony, try to throw out some evidence, suppress evidence, and then shoot for reasonable doubt. With the death penalty on the page, that might be a negotiating tool by the feds to say, okay, if he'll plead the life, we'll let him plead the life, right? So no, I don't, you ask why he did it. I think it's a combination. I think he did it because he wanted to do it. I think he wanted to make a statement. I think he read, the Unabomber's thing, and he felt he was the next Unabomber. He was going to reach out and lash out, and I'm smart enough. I'm going to get the system, and I'm going to prove I can get away with it. But you just can't do that anymore with cameras everywhere, technology, phones. You got people in the community, once you saw his picture and the person picked him out at the McDonald's, it's not that easy to commit crimes and get away with it anymore. The only people that really do for a while are serial killers, right? Because they kill, and there's no trace back to them. And they do it methodically. They know where they are, when they do. You don't pick New York City at a hotel where cameras are everywhere and kill the CEO. And New York City, they're going to put all the forces out because they don't want people to stop going to New York City, especially these important CEOs. So it's a combination. When I saw him coming out, I kept thinking of Hannibal Lecter coming out on that gurney with the thing on it. I mean, I thought it was just crazy, all the security. But they're sending a message to those who are offering him as a hero. We aren't going to tolerate it. We're going to protect this city, and we're going to protect the police.
So, COE, leave this comment up, COE, but I just want to say something. When this story broke on day one, I called Dr. Ann Burgess, who's a friend of mine and friend of the show and a living legend, I'm proud to say. She is one of the original. She helped develop profiling at the FBI. She's close to 90 years old and still going strong, still teaching at Boston College. And she was named a living legend. Anyway, I called her. I said, what's going on? We had her on the show. I had Greg McCrary on the show. But you know who else I called? I called Carm, who's a licensed therapist, my mother. And Carm gave me a theory on day one. And I'm going to get to that. This is what you call another tease to leave you hanging. But wait till you hear the twist and what Carm said on day one. It's coming a little bit later in the show. This comment reminded me of it. Dr. DeBorey, it has been reported that he experienced visual snow. Is that associated with a certain mental disorder? I'll say this, never heard of the term until we got to Brian Koberger at the University of Idaho, is accused of killing those four students. He apparently was dealing with visual snow. So what is visual snow? I don't know if this is true, whether he was dealing with it or not, but what does it tell you from a mental health perspective?
Well, actually, I didn't know what that is, so I just looked it up.
I love the honesty.
So, and it's actually what it says. It's a rare neurological condition that causes people to see persistent flickering dots across their entire visual field. Now, I mean, and again, my background's actually as a neuropsychologist, but so I haven't heard of it. I don't know exactly what it is, but you know, it probably can be dealing with something in the visual cortex. But I would defer to a neurologist on that. I'm not exactly sure what that is. That isn't necessarily a mental health condition. It's a neurological condition. Now, could he have been hallucinating, having a visual hallucination? Sure. They're very, very rare visual hallucinations, unless it's, you know, usually drug induced. But it can happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Anything is possible. Is it probable? I don't know. But anything is possible.
Yeah, and now a question I'm almost certain you will be able to give us an answer to very well is, both in Pennsylvania today and in New York, these quote-unquote fans, pro-Luigi demonstrators showed up. I think there was about 100 at one point in Pennsylvania. Same deal with the New York City situation. There was one couple from Indiana. They're wearing the Luigi hats from Mario Brothers. They were, you know, asked by the media why they're there. And they say, this is one quote, as far as I see it, Luigi killed one person, but health insurance companies destroy millions of lives every year. Free Luigi was what the sign read. What's going on with these people? I mean, I do understand, because like what you said earlier, I have cursed out sweetly some health insurance, not, you know, the operators who I feel bad for. COE, I'll tell you, I'm kind of notorious with some of these, like, you know, the call centers. But anyway, it is very frustrating. But how do you go from frustrating to supporting the killing in broad daylight in mid Manhattan, not completely broad daylight, but early in the morning in midtown Manhattan? How do you go from one to the other?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah. I'm talking about these. Why does he have fans?
Yeah, you know, I look, I don't condone that at all. I mean, I was seeing all over social media, you know, people talking about how they have no empathy for, you know, the man who was killed, his family, his two kids. I mean, that's just not okay. Look, I get it. Insurance companies are very, very frustrating. And I'm saying it again, I see it on both ends, and it's really, really, really hard to deal with. I can't stress the really enough. But going and supporting that, it's not okay. It's not okay. Look, you can have your own opinions, but you don't get out there and say you have absolutely no empathy for the family of a man who was killed.
Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, is in a bit of trouble himself. He showed up because he's a politician. Also, used to be a member of the NYPD. David, do you know him from the NYPD?
Well, I know his background and history precedes himself. I'll put it that way.
I'll tell you guys a little story. My good friend, his brother was the youngest ever captain in the NYPD, and Eric Adams used to work for him. And let's put it this way. He was less than impressed with his law enforcement skills. Yeah, let's put it that way. Yeah. And not to mention, he caught him napping on the job a few times. But here you go. Here's Eric Adams today.
I want to send a very clear, loud message that this act of terrorism and the violence that stems from it is something that would not be tolerated in the city. We wanted to personally be here to show the symbolism of leading from the front, of the apprehension. Some of these detectives will finally sleep tonight after this person has been brought to justice here in New York City.
It's ironic he's saying that because this guy is on the verge of ending up at Rikers, too. Very close. He's got another resignation in his administration. But Tim Jansen, that's a whole other show. Talk to me about you. So you were a federal prosecutor, Tim. I mean, these federal charges, they win a ridiculous amount of time, 97, 98% of the time. I mean, is he already cooked before this has ever begun?
Pretty much. It's a slam dunk case. His lawyers can spend a lot of money. The best they're going to get is maybe a hung jury and maybe get another trial. I don't see anybody getting 12 jurors in a federal courtroom finding him not guilty. That is not going to happen. And I doubt his lawyers are even telling him that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You just don't win that often in federal court because they don't have to take cases. They pick and choose. They got pretty good investigators. They have everything locked down, and they feel comfortable they have enough. And the rules of evidence in federal court are much more open than they are in most state courts. State courts are rules of exclusion, and federal court is just rules of inclusion. Everything comes in. If everything comes in, you have a lawyer, the truth will come out. That's what federal, and unfortunately, the truth comes out 98% of the time guilty. Yeah, so,
yeah. I mean, and Tim, another question to you. What about like the court of public opinion? You know, this is an interesting one. You know, the people who.
I agree with that.
Yeah. People who are not. Yeah. I mean, the people who are not supporting him think he's guilty, but those who support him are questioning. And I've already heard people say it's a conspiracy theory. He didn't really do this. The NYPD planted evidence. But what about like the public perception of what's going on? How does that affect the defense team?
Well, one thing, I agree with that. You're always presumed innocent. You are, okay? You asked my opinion. And if I was in the jury box, I would give him that presumption. You asked me what my experience is and what's going to be like. It's going to be very difficult to win. And he doesn't have to present any evidence, but I think the feds, I mean, he has the gun. The same gun matches the description. Clearly, that's a tough hurdle to get over. I mean, the only thing worse would be if they captured him at the scene with the gun, right? The fact he's gone with the gun, no evidence that there was a co-conspirator, anybody helped him. He's presumed innocent. And the jurors will say that. And if they believe he's guilty before the trial, they'll be released from jury service. But you know what? When you pick a jury, you're going to have jurors that want to sit on that trial.
Yeah.
And they all have motives while they're on that trial. You could have an anti-gun person on that trial.
How do you know, right? You don't have a stealth fan of his on the
jury? Right. You don't. And in federal court, you don't even get to ask the questions. Mm-hmm. And everybody says, hey, I want to pick the best juror. You're not picking people like you want. Your goal is to get rid of the people you don't want, because you're never going to get the people you want because the prosecution's going to get rid of them. So you just got to get rid of the bad ones and hope that the people didn't lie.
Yeah. By the way, Ned Smith says he hasn't denied it. My dear mother in the chat, she said it was an off the record comment. What Carm doesn't realize is she didn't say that when she told me. So it's on the record now. It's about to be on the record. Carm, you have no choice. It's not even Carm. It's a public thing now that's floating out there. It's not confirmed, but I'm going to bring it up because Carm brought it up in a little bit. David, to you, retired NYPD detective. So there was a troubling case story the other day, like a day ago. A guy in Michigan is now in custody. This is in the middle of a staff meeting, and this guy just kind of loses it. Looks like, what you would expect a typical, middle America corporate-looking guy to look like. That's what this guy looks like. And he gets up and stabs the head of the company mid-meeting, and people are saying this is potentially a copycat act to what Luigi pulled off. How concerned are you from a law enforcement perspective that we're going to see people now taking liberty to do these sorts of things to people that they don't like in business?
You see these things, and there is a strange way people are now. Art, life is imitating art. Art imitates life. There was a film, Natural Born Killers, that Oliver Stone made, and Mickey and Mallory Knox were the serial killers, and they were all praising them. We're seeing that. We're seeing social media pushing people out there. They're putting themselves now as like the Holden Caulfield, where they're going to save the world from uncertain doom, and they're the only ones that can do it. This is something that it is beyond the pale to watch people do this and rationally believe that what happened is justifiable, because the hypocrisy is so massive. These are the same people who believe in certain things that are opposite of that. And now you have this whole, you're putting something on a pedestal that does not deserve to be, that someone decided, made in their own mind, that they wanted to take out somebody. Not only did they take them out, planned, plotted it, did it, tried to get away with it. And he's now, the only reason why he, on that initial perp walk in Pennsylvania, when he came out of the truck, he turned around and saw the media. And then he decided to prophesize and throw that out there. And that's what it is. If he was a 59-year-old worker, a little small guy who looked like he was sick his entire life, you could feel almost empathy to that. Almost. You cannot feel empathy for a 26-year-old who's never had a bad day in it. Pain, we all have pain. We're all hurting. He's not had a bad day in his life. He got his master's degree in computer science. He lived around the country. His parents, his grandfather was an immigrant who came here and built what that family is today with his sweat and blood and tears. And you don't think he went through pain and suffering more than his grandson? This is where I think society's losing it. We're losing the reality that life is not what you want it to be. There are struggles. There are pain. There are things that you don't like. There is suffering. But that's what life has been about. It's overcoming them. And we're just standing and praising a person who should not be praised in any way, shape, or form, nor his actions. And this is what we have to really understand. This is where people have to take a stand and say, no more of this. No more.
And to the new police commissioner's credit, she went out there and said exactly that. Here's my mom again. The cult of personality, the true star of the show, the only person in history to ever sign a book that she's not written. And did I tell you it's on Kindle right now for $1.99 for 3 weeks? Speaking of Confidential, she also now has a theory of his mental state leading up. So Tuesday night, by the way, this is, as Dr. Tabori can tell you, it's a very tough time of year. It's a nice, beautiful time of year, but a lot of people have a hard time. They don't get along with their families. They don't like their family members. Family members irritate them, whatever it is. It is not all fancy, beautiful Christmas parties like Tim Jansen's world. But it's so the point is we're all doing Christmas. Well, Carm and I are going to do a Christmas Eve show. I've invited Steve Cohen. I'm hoping he'll jump on as well. And we're going to do a look back at like the top 10 biggest true crime criminals of 2024. And Carm suggested a title because this is what she says to me about me. She's the title of the thumbnail is "What's Wrong with These People?" So that will be the Christmas Eve show. We will go through it. And we'll ask her on that night her theory of his mental state leading up to the moment of the murder. But Dr. Tabori, to you, it is now, again, been released, and we talked about this a little bit, but I'll give you some more details, that he apparently sourced within the NYPD saying that he was planning this as far back as August. There's a quote in his journal from August 15th saying the details are finally coming together, noting that he was glad that he procrastinated in his preparations because it, quote unquote, allowed him to learn more. And then on October 22nd, this is now shared by federal investigators. He says, and he misspells it, ironically, but he says, going to whack the CEO of one of the insurance companies in attendance, calling this investor conference where Brian Thompson was heading to a windfall, a true windfall. What do you make of these writings? Obviously, again, it seems very premeditated, but, you know, he also is said to have read the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski's writings, and it sounds like, you know, Ted Kaczynski, also a very brilliant mind, sounds like he was trying to be him in a weird way. You know, Kaczynski eluded authorities for decades, but what about this? I mean, that he's got these writings.
Well, look, you know, these are writings of a non-sane person. You know, he can plan. He's planning. He's intelligent. His executive functioning is intact, but it's not making much sense. I mean, the Monopoly money, who carries around Monopoly money? You know, who escapes on a bike? Now, maybe it's because I'm living in LA and nobody rides a bike here. Everybody's driving, but escaping on a bike. I mean, it's like people, like after you shoot somebody in broad daylight. So none of that is that natural. He could have planned. Look, the Unabomber was planning. Somebody like Christopher Dornan was planning that. He had a really long manifesto, if I remember correctly. But this is somebody who's at a breaking point. You know, he actually is in pain. You know, when somebody is experiencing, you know, a mental health condition, you know, you have these firings going off in your brain. Now it's not a physical pain, but it's an emotional pain. And sometimes that's even worse.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, he made it a very strong point in this notebook to say, and he writes a direct quote, P.S. you can check serial numbers to verify this is all self-funded, my own ATM withdrawals. I mean, David, to that point right there, that's obviously, you're not going to take him at his word. Is the NYPD just making sure there's still people out there who think those original photos from the ones from the hostel versus the ones from the Starbucks are two different people? So can we be guaranteed that the NYPD is, you know, checking off every box, dotting every I, crossing every T to make sure that it was just him?
Absolutely. Because let me tell you, dealing with prosecutors and defense attorneys, you don't want to look, you don't want to embarrass yourself. That's the big thing. And they check, double check, triple check. The old days, what we used to do is an easel and write down things that we did and what we need to do. This is going over. He's saying, and I'll tell you, anything that's been written down is being checked and double checked. You're saying your ATM withdrawals, I guarantee they've scrubbed everything, social media, bank records, financial records, to tie all these things in. And if he was taking money out of New York, even more so, more beneficial to show that he was in New York, that it isn't that, it's just a different person. Cameras and video surveillance systems, cameras see what the camera sees. I have glasses. I can't see pretty well from 15 feet out. Cameras aren't always great. The camera in the Starbucks and the camera in the cab was better than the camera at the in front of the hotel, which is surprising. You'd think the camera would be better out there for a high-end hotel, for a big hotel in Midtown Manhattan. Everyone wants to find the reasons as to why he didn't do it. What detectives are seeing is, we had a suspect. We have a person. He's been arrested. He was apprehended in Pennsylvania. We are sure. And what they do, they checked everything. They've checked the gun, the ballistics for the gun to that. Fingerprints from there to him. The reason why they didn't have all of this right away is because we didn't know he wasn't identified at the time. So this is beneficial. And what you do is now with this case, you're tying up the loose ends. That's why the federal system, and I guarantee you, a sigh of relief is going through the New York City Police Department. Because it's the defense attorneys, and knowing her, she was going to go really hard. But now the differences in rules of evidence are so different than state. Yep. It's going to make it much harder. And if anything he's going to do, you're going to try to fight. But the reality is, not fight the federal. How do I get him from not getting the death penalty? What could we ask for? And I think that's what's going to happen. It's beneficial for what we're expecting in this case, because it would have been a lot longer, a lot harder in state.
Yeah. That's a great question. What about this, Dr. DeBorey? When are we going to learn the psych evaluation results? How soon does that happen?
That's probably down the road, because, initial psych evals are confidential between the attorney and evaluator and, the client. So I don't think we're going to know those until there's a psych defense, if that's the way they choose to go.
Yeah. And Dr. DeBorey, right on the heels of this question, I'm curious to get your response to this from Laura Bell, that a lot of people are asking these questions. Where's the punishment at for all the people who die every year due to the insurance crooks? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I wish I had an answer for that. I really wish I had an answer for that. But yeah, that gets into a whole different topic that's way beyond the scope of this podcast here. But that's, the American healthcare system, which isn't great. It's really not good.
Yeah, and by the way, here's another one for you. He couldn't make the transition to adulting real life. Sounds like me, but the problem is I'm like 30 years older than him. What about that? Is there truth to this?
Yeah, I have a 19-year-old who's having that same issue, and I don't know what that is. I'm still trying to figure that one out. It's a difficult adjustment. We're also at a very, very different time. Yeah. I mean, we can talk about entitlement. We talk about, parents generation, Gen X, things like that, where, I was completely independent at, 18, but it's, you still have to make that transition. I think this generation is expecting that adulting gets downloaded into their brain as opposed to learning by trial and error, learning the consequences and learning to take responsibility for themselves. Because everything else has been downloaded for them in a matter of seconds. So maybe it's something that's, with this generation of technology.
Yeah. By the way, just a couple more things and we're going to start to wrap it up. Before I forget, tomorrow, 12:30 PM Eastern time, got America's most respected detective. No disrespect to David Sarney, but Phil Waters is here from the Houston PD with Scott Duffy. Another murder for hire plot out of, not a plot. It was done effectively out of Dr. DeBorey's neck of the woods, Woodland Hills, California, which is LA. This is a doctor to the celebrities. And we're covering that tomorrow, thanks to our West Coast crime correspondent, and that would be the COE's mother, Sandy. Sandy has been following it, and it's a crazy case. They beat this guy with baseball bats. He survived, and then a couple months later, he is taken out with a bullet, and they just, guess what, arrested the ex-wife, and we're going to be covering that. Another complicated case. We're getting the Karm thing. That might get some people angry at me because it's not 1,000% confirmed, but it's out in the media right now. Before we get there, Tim, to you right now, first of all, you can tell me, do you charge more for really wealthy clients? What are they paying? No one else needs to know, but what are the Mangione's paying this, high power defense team? And what's the relationship like now? Like, are the parents involved speaking to them? I assume the parents retain them. How often are they talking to Luigi? Explain that to us.
Well, freedom isn't free. And that's what you tell them. State charges are one thing. Federal charges are increased. You charge more for federal court than state court. Death penalty case, you got a lot bigger, substantial penalties up there. So now you got more work, harder work, firm. Time is money. I would assume the family's paying. I don't know exactly the family's wealth, but as he was saying, the grandfather came here. They worked hard. They built a business, built a reputation, and now it's all ruined because of one younger kid that decided he was going to not only commit a heinous crime, but disparage the family name, right? And that's why you don't see crime like this in Japan, right? In Japan, there is no crime. They say because you will dishonor the family. And if you dishonor the family, I mean, when I went there, they said, you don't got to worry about pickpocket. You don't have to worry about anything. There is no crime here because there's honor. I don't know the family dynamics here. Clearly, he was educated. I don't know if it was a left-wing ideology in college. He suffered maybe some family member who didn't get the health care. I agree. The healthcare system is bad, and it hurts the worst, the best people. But that's a civil suit. That's going after them with their – you don't kill people. You sue them civilly, or you bankrupt them. And now with the way social media is, you can target a company and really cause some damage to them and the board. That we don't need to shoot people. But some people I think he just thought he was smart enough he can get away with it. Mm-hmm. And he maybe had some bad juju there by reading the Unabomber's manifesto and maybe listening to some of the wrong people.
But, by the way, I think when you go to these Ivy League schools and he's also a graduate student, a degree from Penn, sometimes it's reinforced that, hey, you're one of the smartest guys in the country. Maybe that went to his head. I have no idea. So on to the Carm thing. This happens. I call Carm without missing a beat. Carm says, Dr. Tabori, this is for you. And then I'm curious to get David, his take on it as well. Carm says, I have a theory. And I said, what is it? She said, I have a feeling that maybe he's repressed his sexuality. He could be gay. And just he comes from a large Italian family, didn't know how to come out. And maybe he just couldn't take the pressure. Then today, Radar Online, which has been around for 20 years now, you know, not the most reliable. So I, you know, don't come screaming at me that I'm irresponsible. I just thought it's fascinating because Carm called this, but they are now there's an outlet called Media Takeout that claims that they have now talked to two different people who say that Luigi was in a relationship. Both of them are male, black, gay males. The quote is, we met at a gay club in Baltimore. He was one of the only white guys in the club, and he bought me a drink. Just using his first name, Sean. He would see me when he was in town, and he was very generous. It went on. And then a second man, another openly gay black man from Philadelphia, claims a very similar relationship, saying that Luigi was really big into hip-hop and black culture. We never really talked about politics or anything like that. I want to underscore, this has not been corroborated. I'm sure there's other outlets working on it. But what about this? What if there is some truth to this, that he was repressed sexually? You know, there's also talk that he couldn't have sex because of his back injury. What if it is something, you know, like where he was just angry because he couldn't be who he wanted to be? Is there a possibility that there's a there?
Look, sure, anything's, you know, anything's possible. Is it probable? I don't know. You know, if we were having this discussion, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, sure, I would go with that. But with this generation, it's a lot more open. People are coming out with their sexuality, pronouns, with everything like that. And it's a lot easier. It's a lot more accepting. So, you know, I look again, possible. I don't buy that one.
Yeah. Poor choices limit your options. Bad choices limit your freedom. That's a great quote right there. Final thing. And then we'll get final thoughts. To the doctor here, a lot of psychological issues here. 2 days. So what happened, Dr. Tabori, is that the family, he cut off ties with the family in July. Then the mother, in November, few months later, files a missing persons report in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Then his picture goes up everywhere. And a sergeant at the San Francisco Police Department says, this guy looks like our missing persons guy. And this guy tips off the NYPD, who are busy chasing down stuff, so they didn't get back to him right away. But the sergeant in San Francisco calls the mother of the missing person, who's Luigi Mangione, and she says that she can't identify, doesn't look like him, she says, the picture, but goes on to tell this sergeant in San Francisco, and I quote here, she could see him shooting the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson. What does that tell you, number one, about the relationship between mother and son, and number two, about his state of mind there?
Yeah, that tells me that his mom knew something was going on with him, that there was something that was coming up, and that it didn't just happen in the last few months and the last 6 months. This has been going on for a little bit of time. You know, things don't just, you know, when people have a psychotic break, people usually think that it comes out of nowhere. It really doesn't. It's just that the things that were happening get explained away. And you know, there probably were snippets and the mom was paying attention.
A lot of people are asking me, look, some people might say it's irresponsible. It's out there. It's swearing. I saw it at a few other places. And again, it is not corroborated, and I'm not saying that's what it is, but I think what Carm was saying is that sometimes that can be such a pressure, and times have changed. Of course it is easier, but you know, it was on the heels of us doing a profiling show too, and maybe who is this person, what's going on, and Carm thought, you know, maybe that could have contributed, the fact that he wasn't maybe feeling like he was, maybe he was able to, but didn't feel like he was able to be free about his sexuality, which also points to the fact that he said he couldn't have sex because he told that to someone else and he was blaming it on his back. So time is going to tell here. Again, we do not know that for certain. Not trying to stir the rumor mill here, but I just thought it was interesting that Carm said that. And then I see, what is it? And then I see that. Joel, she said, I could see him doing something like that. What did I say? Didn't I say that? Thought that's what I said. Okay, anyway. David Sarney, a little bit of confusion at the end of the show here. He is a retired NYPD detective. He worked within several positions, all around great guy, born and bred in Brooklyn, 27-year career. He taught the next generation of NYPD officers prior to retiring, and now he is teaching the new generation at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, one of the best places for that in the country. So, David, your final thoughts and what's next here in terms of the investigation?
I'll say this. I think we a lot of things are coming into play. The trial's going to happen. You have a crime take place. That's what you're focusing on. We can't worry about the ins and outs of other things that people feel comfortable and feel about. You know, ethics and morality are solid. Fluidity happens with gender and sexuality. That's all good. But the reality is right now, you're looking at a person, now a defendant, in a crime of murder. The charges are there, both state and federal. You need to focus on that. Let the detectives are doing their due diligence to make sure that if this is the person that did it, the evidence will show beyond a reasonable doubt that that is the person who committed the murder. That's what we have to remember. And I think we forget as a society that there are things that are right, wrong, and illegal. This was wrong. This action was wrong. We have a person who may have committed that crime. Let's focus on that. All the other arguments could be held with your politicians and your healthcare agencies, but the reality is this person is accused of a murder. He is being held pending trial and innocent until proven guilty, but the reality is detectives are doing their job to make sure, without the politics and the biases that we people have, the case was done as best as possible by the greatest detectives in the world, and that's the NYPD.
Lindsay, I know you've been through hell and back. Thank you, David, for that. Getting yelled at as per usual. There's never a show where I don't get yelled at. Joel, that's not what she said. Come on. How do you know, Lindsay? And this is according to NYPD, that is exactly what she said. So I don't know. I'm going by the word of investigators, and that is what they said. They made a very clear and this has been all reported everywhere. So whether it's true, I don't know, but I'm going off pretty reliable sources within the NYPD and pretty reputable media outlets. I mean, Is there a possibility it's not true? Yeah, there's of course a possibility that it is not true. But so far, I've not seen that. Dr. Ildiko Tabori, she was featured in the A&E documentary about not my dysfunctional family, but the Menendez brothers, who actually make me look pretty normal. She received her PhD in clinical psychology out in Los Angeles. Let's circle back to the person that really matters here, which is this guy. It's the holidays are coming up. I guess as a therapist, you know, they've got to be leaning on people. They could be in therapy right now. What do you say to these sons of his, the estranged wife, who obviously I'm sure still loves him on some level? Mm-hmm. What do you say to them?
What can you say to them? I mean, the only thing you can do is give them support and love and tell them that their father loved them, that this was very, very wrong. You know, no matter what's going on with, you know, his murderer, it wasn't okay. And that, honestly, people need to get off social media and, you know, praise Luigi for doing what he did. None of that's okay. You have to think about these two children and the fact that they could seem not okay.
You heard that from a psychologist. Don't have to go further than David Sarney to hear that. It is, and I agree, never okay to murder in the name of a cause. This guy was, I said it before, really smart. He could have made a difference in many ways, but this was the wrong way to make that difference. Tim Jansen, honored to call him a friend of the show, a friend of mine, a friend of everyone at STS Nation, just a class act, one of the best criminal defense attorneys around. His firm is the firm of the year in Tallahassee. He's got the Christmas party of the year. Everyone's commenting on those nutcrackers behind you there, Tim Jansen. This is going to be a huge uphill battle legally for him. What are the next steps legally? And if you were advising him, I'm not saying taking the case, but if you were advising him, what would you say to him today?
Well, what I want to say was this panel was excellent because this kind of case brings in three different avenues, right? You got a defense lawyer, you got law enforcement, and you got the mental health issue. These coincide a lot with a lot of cases. When I was a younger lawyer, I learned a lot from police officers. They learned a lot from me. I cross-examined them. They made mistakes. They came up to me afterwards and said, I'm never going to do that again. I've been in court. Officers, they taught me things, okay? The system is better because the people raise their games. And in these, and it's not a game, but I'm saying these trials, these investigations, they're done by the best. And the serious cases are handled by the most experienced people. I'm glad he's got good lawyers. He's not going to have somebody appointed to him. He can complain he didn't get legal defense. New York put the best people on this case. So what's going to happen? The truth is going to come out. And there might be a concept of a mental health issue. I think they might raise it. They'd be incompetent if they didn't. But I think what's going to come out is he committed a heinous crime for the wrong reasons. And the system's going to see it, and hopefully the community and the people will not make him a martyr, and they will realize this is wrong. You can air your grievances different ways. And it's sad because he was intelligent. He had a lot of things many of my clients never had. He had an education. Sounds like he was able to travel. He was smart. He was a pretty nice-looking young man. He had things that a lot of people don't have, and it's sad when they go off the rails. You can understand when someone that goes off the rails that was abused, and that's something different. But I hope we all keep an open mind. I hope the society realizes murder is not the way to go, and I wish everybody a happy Christmas. And if you're in town, you can come by the party.
He's expecting 300 people. Tim's awesome. His wife's awesome. His daughters are awesome. I want everybody to have a very Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate. Happy New Year. Be safe. We still have a show tomorrow. We've got a show Monday. I'm working on something with Steve Cohen involving Alan Greenberg. I just don't know that we could pull it off in time. But we're going to do something Monday night. And then Tuesday, it is Christmas Eve with Carm, and hopefully Steve Cohen will be doing a recap of the bigger true crime stories. Very casual recap. So please join us for that. Again, if you like Joe, hit the like button, subscribe. Patreon, it's all there for you. Don't forget the book on sale, $1.99. I cannot stand what survive. I cannot watch that show. All that guy does is plug his book. I tell everybody, number one, I kind of do it in fun, but number two, because I like to annoy people. Number two, it is the most important story I've ever reported on. Number three, it'll make you feel normal. Number four, I do get yelled at by everybody, but I wouldn't trade my mother for anybody. She's been through it all, and she still has one of the most positive, upbeat attitudes. And you will learn, you won't learn anything from me, but you'll learn a lot from her. And by the way, a little tease, the book, each chapter starts with an actual voicemail from Carm to me. And if you didn't think I was, she and I were weird enough yet, you will if you read those messages. So there you go. Love you, America. Again, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy New Year. David Sarney, you're a mensch. Thank you. I love that these guys in New York, they use words like miss you goss. They know it all from the streets of New York. Retired NYPD Detective David Sarney, Dr. Aldico Tabori, Tim Jansen, the best criminal defense attorney around, and they don't make him any better than the NYPD. Let's think of Brian Thompson and his family, and I will see you all. Yes, stick around for 1 second. I'll see you all tomorrow.